And welcome inside this Thursday edition of the Sports Ethos Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comente here with you, as always, alongside the incomparable and all-knowing Jill Adge. We're back on this Thursday instead of Wednesday. Yesterday, I was knocked on my ass for my COVID booster, so Jill so kindly allowed us to do it today, which is good because now I'm not as in much pain. And we can talk about the Magic game. The Kings beating the Magic last night, Jill, in Sacramento before they head out on the short road trip. They've won three straight. We're all back in. They're 11-14. They're in the play-in as of today, as of December 9th. Irrelevant, but it's true. They're the 10th seed as Portland continues to crumble. So they're doing, it makes me laugh because they're doing exactly what we were saying they were going to do when we were writing them off. We were saying it's all about selling off the assets you can and looking ahead. You made the point, Jill, that every time we think the Kings are about to tumble out, just the bottom's going to give out, they totally flip a switch and all of a sudden start winning games and making management believe that they're a contender, which I still don't think they are. I think they're just playing way better in terms of like the style that they should be playing anyway. They should be playing fast, and now guys are making their shots. Terrence Davis has showed up. But Monty McNair, you know now he's just going to go all in, isn't he? He's going to try and make some big trades now, whereas a couple weeks ago, that probably wasn't the thought process.
Yeah. I don't know.
Are you excited about it at all that they're winning? Like, I guess that's a stupid question. Yeah, we always enjoy that they're winning.
It is, but I mean, it doesn't mean anything more or less to me. Not even that. I don't feel necessarily one way or about it. Like, I like that they're winning, but it's not making me believe or not believe any more or less than what it was before. I mean, I still need to see more of it. And we just got, you know, injured guys back. You know, it's nice to see Terrence Davis and Bagley step up. But again, it's a small sample size. Like, I need more. You know, I already saw people last night like, oh, you know, they've had a three great game stretch. Trade everybody away now and let these guys take the reins. And I'm like, okay, you can say trade everybody away because things aren't working, but not because you want guys to take over after a three-game sample size. Like, sorry. I mean, let's be realistic.
Who are they even referencing in that?
Terrence Davis and Bagley.
Okay.
And I'm like, and one has no to have them take the reins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't really, Bagley's, yeah.
But my thing is, that's fine, but that's nothing that this front office has shown to be interested in. Like, I can see Buddy and Terrence Davis taking over, but again, we still have to have the Bagley conversations. I haven't heard he's saying and doing all the right things, but there's nothing that makes me believe he still doesn't feel like he wants to be traded. Right. I mean, he made that clear privately to the front office. I mean, I don't know. I don't think Alvin taking over for, you know, eight games has necessarily changed 3 years of or 2 years of wanting to be out of here. But, you know, right. Who knows? Again, I'm rooting for everybody to succeed. I'm just not sold on a big change. If Monty can prove that he can turn it around with them, more power to you. Then you proved that, you know, you did something that nobody thought was possible. But I'm just not taking a three-game sample size as anything to start making drastic decisions on. Yeah. But that's just me.
Yeah. I just know Vivek Ranadive is looking at this with so, you know, he's unrealistic, Vivek, in what this means for the team. You know, he's going to be subtly telling McNair, you know, we got to go all in, like it's working, like let's do this. When, yeah, it's three games. They just beat a team that has five wins last night. And it was a game with no defense, just all scoring. And it was fun to watch. I mean, it's they really have reverted back to 2018 Kings. It's shoot less threes, play way faster, don't care as much about defense, go a little deeper on your bench. It's not like a strict rotation necessarily, a tight eight-man group, nine-man group. The bench gets extended to keep up with the like how fast you're playing.
And
I don't know. Again,
my thing is if you want to go all in or you want to blow it up, I'm fine doing either or, but do it smartly, like do it in a smart way. right? Like, do it with something that makes sense. Like, that's all I ask. Like,
and the Kings never do anything that makes
you know
sense.
What I mean? And so that's right. And so, yeah, it's just, I mean, we're finally seeing, you know, Terrence Davis do what he did, you know, kind of last year when he came in here. And it's like him and Buddy Hield completely switched places. Like,
yeah, seriously.
In the month of December, Buddy's shooting 11% from three on 10 awesome. Attempts. 11%. Sweet. Where Davis is 30.
A lot higher. Shooting
52% from three on 8 attempts. Where prior to that, he was shooting 26% in November on 4 mm-hmm. attempts and 10% on 3 attempts. And Buddy was shooting 40% in October, 36% in November, and dropped to 11. So on four less attempts a game. Okay, his minutes are down.
Those are numbers per game. Okay. Yes, I was like, how do you shoot 10% on one out of three? I was like that.
Yeah, that's for the month as a whole.
Okay.
But in the first 2 months, he was attempting 10 a game, but he was playing 28, 29 minutes. Now he's shooting six at 19.6 minutes. But this is the one thing I like about Gentry, right? Like, he's going with the hot hand, and that's what we've been asking for. Like, if someone taught, don't take them out because you have to give someone else their minutes, right? Like,
right.
Go with what's working. And the same way they went with Buddy, you know, somewhat when Terrence Davis wasn't working, or they were trying to find other ways to go, even if you're playing Davion more, right, than putting Buddy in at times, who has, you know, been kind of on offensively right now. So, you know, we saw again yesterday, even with Barnes came back, the only thing that changed was, you know, Harkless, but everyone else pretty much got their run.
Yeah, Harkless didn't
play
yesterday.
Seemed to make it work. You know, offense was hitting, but defense was still atrocious.
I might be the outlier that doesn't care.
I mean, if
that.
you can score 145 points, well, cool. Like, but you still gave up. That's not, again, you scored 145 points on a team that won 5 games. You can't go do that to somebody else and then think you're going to like, sorry, yeah, like that's not going to happen against. That's not going to happen against good teams, right? Like that's not a winning strategy.
It won't happen against Cleveland.
So you have to be able to stop them, you know, and maybe it was just Orlando going berserk the same way the Kings went berserk. It was just one of those ones, but I still think there were very many times where it was still the Ole, I'm not going to be physical. Like, because you saw when they came out in the third quarter and actually were physical with them, Orlando had some trouble, right? And then like you let it go a little bit and they made their little streak, which is fine. That's going to happen. But you show it again when you're physical and you do the punching rather than being punched, like your defense can lead to offense. So to me, you just need that consistently because you're not going to be playing the Orlando Magic every game. And you can't, that team hadn't scored 100 points in like weeks. And yeah. You let them score like 130 or whatever it was, like, so, you know, that just can't.
I agree. I hear you. This is unusually not, I want to say pessimistic on your end, Jill, but you know, you're highlighting what went wrong in the game.
No, I love the win. I'm just saying you can't do that to the next team and think you're going to.
I'm happy that they're winning, that they're playing at this style that so fits them. I agree that they're a much better team when they're physical. I don't think that the roster as it currently is a physical roster. That's why when Walton was trying to play like that,
and that's what's so frustrating to me is they show they can do it, but they just,
but that's not their strength in my opinion. And you know, smart teams play their strengths. Walton tried to force this team to be like defensive oriented and a physical team. And these guys, I think they're showing that.
I think you can say be average defensively and not be falling, because right now they're falling down to 26th in the league. You were at 20. Now you're 26. Like there is a fall off. To me, you can still play fast, but still have defense. Like it shouldn't, it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Right.
It should not have to
be. But we got to get one before we get the other. You can't get both at the same time right out of the gate, I don't think. And they're learning how to play this offensive style. Why?
Why? But see, why does that negate everything that you were that you've been teaching on defense?
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just saying, like, it's not like this core group has never run before.
Yeah.
Or as Gentry says, I'm not throwing out new stuff. You're just running.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, we don't know exactly what Gentry's telling them.
It's like, I mean, that's what he's saying publicly. Is he's saying he's not changing it. I'm just telling them to hurry up. So to me, that shouldn't negate anything you're doing defensively because the other team is still playing their normal game.
Right.
Like, I mean, and half the time your defense can lead to fast opportunities.
Well, maybe that's exactly.
To me, it's just frustrating that you can't even imagine, like, you can't just be average at something. It has to be completely one end of the spectrum or the other. But that's why they're bad, right? Like, until they figure that out,
they're going to be
a pipe dream for me. It's a pipe dream for me.
Well, it's realistic that McNair will look at trade acquisition similar to how he did last year, where he's like, I'm looking for guys that play a good offensive style that fit us, that can make threes. But their background and where they really made names for themselves is defense. That was what he figured he was doing when he got DeLon Wright and Terrence Davis. I think he'll approach it the same. How can I maybe shed some guys that don't play good defense? Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, that want to be out of here, that the Kings have been talking about getting rid of forever.
Kudos to Bagley, is he has gotten better in certain part of defense. But half of it too is just like, can you be a good team defender, right? Like, we don't need you to be an all-star individual defender, but can you as a team be, you know, learn how to handle each other? I think that's a big difference too. And having the knowledge of knowing how to do that and not, I mean, we see not everyone seems capable of figuring or picking that out.
Well, as we approach that December 15th date, where trades are going to start appearing, Bagley's stock continues to point up. He had 12 points yesterday in 19 minutes, 6 rebounds. No assists, but we never really look at that part of his stat line anyway. And then Buddy Hield's going the exact opposite direction. As you had alluded to, Jill, he's switching roles with Terrence Davis. Davis is getting those minutes. He's playing the way Buddy can play at times. But right now, Buddy's playing horrible. 18 minutes, 5 points, 2 of 13 from the field, 1 of 10 from 3. Because that's, you know, Buddy, even if he's not making his shots, which that was one of those days last night, he was not making anything, he's still going to shoot. It makes him frustrating and annoying for fans because it's not going in. But he doesn't give a shit. He's going to keep doing it until it goes in. And it only went in once from distance. So
easier to swallow if you're doing that and then you're like some all-star defender where it's like, okay, you can handle like the misses. Something
you can hang your hat on.
But when it's not working,
he was plus 4.
It can be rough.
In the plus or minus, second best of the 5 guys that came off the bench for the Kings behind Thompson, who had a double-double. And continues to play pretty strong basketball when called upon. He's the tough guy. If you're gonna put anyone on this team as, you know, the enforcer, it's obviously him and Alex Len. But Bagley's great at doing what he's supposed to do right now. He is doing exactly everything, saying the
all
right
I can
things.
Ask for, right.
Right. And that'll make him, if he does end up getting traded, which we still expect him to be, it'll make his exit a little bit more, you know. I don't even know what the word would be.
Well, and this is the thing.
It was never going to be
like
painful.
Palatable.
It's just going to be pretty.
Well, I mean,
because
if you can pack, if he is gaining value, like we always talk about, what will his value be in a package and what will it be by itself? Like if you're trying to trade him now for a second rounder, I would not take that. Right.
Oh yeah.
But if you're trying to now package him in something and
with
he
Buddy.
Actually has good value, right? Because those are the bigger contracts. If you can swing for something and someone will take that package along with draft pick, you know, because let's be realistic, the Kings draft picks are their biggest assets because you are a 15 straight years in the lottery. Mm-hmm. No one else, like if you're looking at someone else and someone's interested in legit draft picks, it's not a Milwaukee Bucks draft pick. It's not a Clippers draft pick. You know what I mean? Like you're getting an almost guaranteed, like 15 or lower, right? Like, because even if they finish 10th, like you're still getting, you know, something under 15. So again, like depending on the protections, to me, that's their most valuable asset. And so if you can increase the value of the package you're putting with those draft picks and you can make a swing at someone, that's a win for everybody. I mean, that gets Bagley his, you know, what he wanted to start the year being somewhere else. And that could get you a potential home run swing in something. But at this point, at the beginning, people were saying, just trade him. I don't do that.
No.
mean, we were never in that train, yeah. But,
neither is McNair.
Me. It's good for the Kings and that he's showing something. If you do end up staying, it's good if he's showing something, that if you can package it with something and it's now more lucrative to whoever's taking it back.
Yeah. McNair has already proven that he was never going to trade Bagley just for anything, because right. He would have done that by now. What do you think of a trade of, just looking at the Magic last night and watching some of their talented young players? What about shipping Buddy and Bagley together and maybe a draft pick for Terrence Ross and Mo Bamba? I know we've touched on Mo Bamba in the past, talking about how I would take the flyer on Bamba. And Terrence Ross is one more year on his contract. He's a free agent 2023, making similar annually to Hield, but I think he's a better player than Buddy Hield, more consistent player at least. So I don't know if the Magic would take that. If they really care that much about Bagley's potential, you might have to throw like a protected first round pick in there. But I would definitely take a flyer on Bamba. I think Ross would be an upgrade over Hield, and you get rid of the two guys that don't want
to
be there.
I don't think you'd probably have to throw in. I don't think you'd have to throw in anything. If it matched up. I mean, that's a stretch big man.
Mm-hmm. No, he's young.
That brings something on defense that we don't have.
Very good defender.
If Shot you blocker. Could pair that with Holmes, or you figure out whatever you had to do. But I mean, that to me, that's just a swap of young players.
I need different
who could use some new scenery. But I mean, you're seeing Bamba. The wins aren't there, but Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. Have actually played, like, since they've gone the two big man route. They've actually played well together. But and I know people will be like, oh, it's another big man, you know, we need the wing. Like, I agree, I get that. But Bamba, if I know you only saw one game, but if you watch them, like, he stretches the floor, and he's done it since he's been in the league. Like, this isn't a one-off year of him, you know, stretching the floor. Like, that's always been his game.
Terrence Ross is definitely
a wing. And he averages blocks. Like, his blocking is something we don't have. And the salary, I don't think, wouldn't hurt you. So with what you're trying to sell him for. But yeah, I mean, that's something I would listen to for sure.
I'll have to run that through the trade machine to make sure the facts check out, the numbers add up.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they were in the same draft. Bamba would be getting less than Bagley, obviously, unless their seven end up matching up based on that starter minute, you know, the starter minutes thing at 7 million. But I don't know about Ross's salary compared to Buddy. Yeah. I would think it'd be less, but
it is definitely less. It's like 12 million, but Buddy makes what, 20 million a year?
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But I think the Magic have cap space. A couple extra notes about this game before I ask you a different trade-related question, Jill. So Fox had 33, probably his best, I would say his best game in a while, maybe even his best game this season statistically. He's averaged 25 points over the last three games, this little win streak that they're on. That's not a coincidence. When Fox plays well, the Kings are a better team. Davis stayed rolling in the starting lineup, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, really active on, like, just in transition. You know, if he's not scoring, he's hustling up the court, drawing a defender, looking to be an outlet. You know, he does that very well. Yeah. Holmes hurt his eye again. This time it got bloody. He did not come back after playing about 10 minutes. That sucks. Eye injuries are the worst.
I couldn't tell, was it eye or was it like the top of his nose? I couldn't tell the way that the blood was flowing.
That's fair.
And I guess because I thought it was like, it was either like right there or that, or this piece right here, you know, that part. And then it was coming down that way. But by the way, even his mom was talking, like, you could never really get a clear answer. And it could have been both, because it did look like it came like one of these. You can see me doing it, but nobody else can.
No one else can. I get it.
But yeah, his mom was saying,
doctor,
you're gonna have to start putting goggles on him again, like he used to have.
Yeah.
Once upon a time. At this point, just
I do not. No one likes getting poked in the eye. I have a big thing, like, I'm like, nah. I mean, we wear glasses, but
yeah.
What's that?
What is that? Like, 3 times this year? I mean, what are the odds? At this point,
I wear glasses because I don't like touching my eye. I don't like contacts. I don't like doing that. My mom sometimes will have it where the contact breaks in her eye, just to like dig in and get it out.
Yeah.
Ugh. No.
Yeah.
Hard pass on that.
Yeah. Reggie Holmes Jackson wears some cool ones too. Like ever since he had his, Reggie Jackson on the Clippers has some ones that he wears.
Oh yeah.
Cause he didn't used to, but after his injury or whatever, he now wears it. And so, I mean, they have like cool, up to date ones now compared to the old school, like, what was it? Grant on the, was it?
Horace Grant on the Bulls.
the old school goggles.
Those are cool too. Yeah. They have like,
you just don't see them like croakies.
Yeah. Like can go around your neck. And then the threes and the free throws. I've overwhelmed by how consistent they've been with Gentry at these numbers. 34 attempts last night from three, 15 to 34, 44%. That's awesome. And they've been very steady on between 30 and 35 attempts per game. They haven't gone past that. Whereas with Walton, especially in the beginning, as I've said many times, they were shooting like 50 a game, which was so annoying and irritating because when they weren't making them, now you've shot 50 attempts and you've made 10 and you lost the game by 15 points because you were living and dying by the three. And then free throws, 21 of 25 from the line. I feel like they've been at the line at least 22, 23, 25 times every game in the past week or so. Those are encouraging signs. Those are numbers that you want to stay at. Free throws, you might even want to get higher. And 21 to 25 is great too. I mean, they're not missing so many of their free throws like they've done in the past. So encouraging things there. 5-3 in 8 games under Alvin Gentry. Again, now they're the 10th seed in the play-in. They're like one game out of the 8th seed or maybe even the 7th seed. I'd have to look back at it. Clippers are starting to pick up some steam now that they're not playing the Kings. So they've created like a little three-way distance.
Tie for 9th, but maybe in 10th based on how that falls.
The bottom of the West is a crapshoot.
It's
a crapshoot. So the trade question I was going to ask.
And now with so many people going out and protocols all over the league.
True.
And injuries, like the Pelicans just lost Lewis for the year now. Akira Lewis to an ACL, like you just don't know, right? Like, so when you take advantage of the opportunities of teams that are above or below you, like that's something that this place has never done, but we're always saying, take advantage of it. Like this could be the time where you strike.
And Harrison Barnes said that after the game, he said, if we can make this consistent, we can do something special here, which I feel we've heard that from Harrison for several years now.
And he has said, and I like how he ends it now with, I know it's just talk at this point. Like we have to show it. Like you've heard this. I have to say it because I have to say it, but like, it was funny. Cause I was listening. Fred VanVleet did a post game for the Raptors after their last one. And he said, someone asked him a question and you couldn't hear the question, but the answer was, I don't know. I'm just sick of playing up and then down and then up and then like good, bad. And I'm like, Raptors are the Spider-Man, like pointing at each other. It was like verbatim the same thing that the Kings players have been saying, like, I'm sick of playing up and then playing down.
The Raptors lost to the Thunder
playing down. Yeah.
So it's, in Toronto.
So, you know, there's other teams going through it. And so like Barnes said, take advantage of it.
Take advantage. Before we get you to reveal the next two names on your coaching list, Jill, I wanted to ask about the Indiana Pacers, who have made it clear that they're going to probably do some sort of fire sale with this horrendous beginning they've had of this season. Turns out it wasn't all Nate Bjorken's fault. He got so much of the blame for the team's, I wouldn't say crumbling, but all the issues that they had throughout last season. He got pinned for it, got fired after 1 year, despite being such a highly touted assistant for so many years in Toronto. Now, Rick Carlisle, a Hall of Fame coach, he can't figure it out either. So kudos to the Pacers for realizing this doesn't work. We're not going to be the Sacramento Kings and keep it going for as long as we can.
Yeah, we fired our successful coach and have had two coaches that haven't been able to figure it out since.
Yeah. So it's
Nate McMillan was the one that was taking them. Yeah. And then, last year, Bjorken got it and then they had injuries again. Right. Brockton was out for a lot of the season. And then this year you had TJ going down for months at a time. both TJs, TJ McConnell and TJ Warren, are still out.
I miss TJ Warren. Bubble TJ Warren.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, have we seen him since then?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
No.
And I know in the article it was saying like they had expressed interest in staying together, which who knows, like if that wasn't the case, then that would be a name I'd be interested in too. But I just don't know. I mean, based on him being out so long for injury, I don't know what you'd be getting.
The Sabonis, Turner,
from him either.
Caris LeVert, that group.
Those were the three big ones.
That's their core, really, outside of Brogdon. I mean, I know you'd want all of those. I would love every single one of those players in Sacramento.
Yeah.
I think Caris LeVert's a fucking budding superstar if he can stay healthy.
So would so many other teams. That's the shitty part.
Yeah. What do we offer in a trade to try and get one of those guys is my question. The draft picks, I think, are your biggest lure.
And I was just going to say, they're talking about a rebuild, and to me, Kings draft picks are the best biggest way to start a rebuild and starting a rebuild. But I think that's where it becomes the question. Are they looking at a smaller rebuild or like a big rebuild? Like, are they looking for young talent? You know, like someone who was a first round pick in the last 2 years, right? So it's kind of like you're getting a first round pick back. It's just one that's already been drafted and not upcoming. So I think that's where a lot of other teams have probably a lot more ammo than the Kings, where the Kings have the draft pick ammo, but other teams actually have more proven, maybe young guys, where we have Tyrese. I mean, like to be honest, like, and then Davion. You could say Davion, but to me, you're still how many games in? Like if there are teams out there that have you know, guys from the first, you know, multiple ones or, you know, things like that. So that it maybe showed a little bit more. So I think that's going to be the biggest question mark when it comes to what kind of a rebuild that they want to do.
True. We need to know a little bit more about the logistics here, the context.
And that's where it's hard. Like, cause right now every team, like if you,
every team wants Sabonis,
you know, looking at every like Twitter fan, you know, whatever, like everybody thinks they have the goods to get them. And then if you read any Athletic or media article, no one's mentioning the Kings like at all. It's good teams like Warriors who have like two of their first round draft picks from this last year that they could throw out to try and land.
And Wiseman.
You know, one Houston has multiple ones that they could do. OKC
on a winning streak.
Has ones. So again, like it's there. Philadelphia was thrown into it. Boston was thrown into it. I mean, this is where it becomes like where, I mean, I see the comment, if Monty can't get this done, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you don't like he's calling. Like, if you don't think he's calling, like you're crazy. But at the end of the day, this is what happens when you miss on your draft picks is you don't have. You know what I mean? Like this is why bad teams can't miss on draft picks. Cause we say to me, this is why I'm always like, I don't care about fit. I care about adding talent because that talent can be moved. Like if you have proven talent, it can be moved. You know what I mean? Like when you're drafting, like in the lottery, best player available, because even if you already have someone in that position, there will be another team out there that wants that top 10 pick. Do you know what I mean? Like that it's, and so when the Kings have missed on all these draft picks, all you have left to trade is draft picks, but there's no players that people want to go along with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's another thing where, you know, you have to hit, like you have to hit.
Yep.
So, you know, he's done well, so at least knock on wood so far from what we've seen. But again, like, in the same sense, the Pacers aren't hurting for point guard help either. So, you know what I mean? Like, so even our young guys to me don't really make sense. And
yeah, the fits are teams that need guards. We have every guard.
That's another one where you'd be hoping to package like a Bagley and Buddy, and your draft picks would do the talking.
Every trade that the Kings might put forth, you'd probably try to bundle those guys.
And that's kind of where it hurts.
Which one of those guys, though, Jill, of the three, would you want the most in Sacramento? It has to be Sabonis, right? Even though that fit isn't perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
he's a ridiculous player. For people that don't pay attention to the Pacers, because it's, you know, it's Indiana.
Just, we don't have a big man that can
do everything,
like navigate that. The floor like that.
Yeah.
We don't have the passing big man. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know we don't have the stretching big man, but we also don't have the passing big man. And so when this team falls apart and like their breakdown on offense falls apart, what do we have left? One-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know how to do anything else, right? If you had a big man that you could throw, like we used to do to Cousins, that you could throw to at the high post and he can navigate, like, yeah. That changes things.
Domantas Sabonis is a genuine example of a modern and very old school big man in one. He's a lot like his father, who played for many years and was a great NBA player, and then is very new age in what he can do, stretching the floor, taking the ball up himself, you know, doing things that big men weren't really doing in the past, but now they do. And he can do all the other stuff, the great passing. He's got, like, you know, Devots-esque type of passing skills. I mean, he's an all-around superstar that would take a good amount to get. But yeah, if your draft picks are allowed to do the talking.
But I think for sure you could make an argument, like you said, for any of those guys.
Legitimately.
And,
yeah.
Bryant had a good one today where he said he heard all offseason how Jared Allen, Mobley, and eventually when they added Markkanen, like, none of those guys would work together, and voila, they're working together. Like, you don't know. We all have a perception of if we think things will work or not, but until you throw it out there and try it, you know, and at some point you have, like, this team has to do that one way or the other.
Sometimes you know, the teams like,
that
zig instead of zag, they end up being the smarter team. It doesn't, you know, it's not always going to hit, but sometimes when you go against the norm, you can find something, you can unearth something. And yeah, Cleveland definitely
every once in a while. Yeah.
Every once in a while. Hasn't worked for the Kings, but okay. Let's get to the coaches. The next two on your list, and we got to clarify, this isn't like, you know, we understand the Kings have won three straight. They're playing some better basketball. Gentry's got the guys playing much more entertaining level of hoops right now. This is not a disparage against Alvin Gentry, but this is thinking that McNair is going to probably end up doing a search unless the Kings really go on a run.
If things fall apart by the end of the year.
Which, knowing how the Kings
operate,
we all
know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah. That's forthcoming. So a long, extensive list that Jill's put together. We had Kenny Atkinson and Sam Cassell the first time around. And now we have some defensive-oriented coaches this time around. Jill, take it away.
Hold on. Let me close the door real fast. As soon as I go to get on, she does it again. Hold on.
No worries. One of these guys I know is someone I'm a big proponent for. I've mentioned his name in previous podcasts. I know he's just waiting for the right opportunity to present itself. He's going to be a great coach. And the other one's on a successful coaching staff. So two good quality candidates here, Jill, that you're about to tell us about.
Okay. So, yes. Yeah. So first one is Darvin Ham. So after transitioning from a player to a coach seamlessly over a decade ago, Ham has accrued plenty of experience throughout his time in the coaching ranks. So he started after he left the league. He started as a G League coach with the Albuquerque Thunderbirds. They are no longer.
Sick name.
But he worked in his role for a couple of seasons before becoming the team's head coach in 2010. The franchise eventually relocated to Canton and are now the Canton Charge, which is the Cavaliers G League affiliate. So his job there, from there, because he did well, led them to him being called from the Lakers, and he ended up getting hired as a player development coach for the Lakers. So he's now spent 11 seasons as an assistant, 2 with the Lakers, 5 with Atlanta, and 4 with Milwaukee. So all good organizations. That coaching experience has come under some more of the modern forward-thinking coaches like Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta and Milwaukee. Mike D'Antoni was actually the one who was with the Lakers when they brought him over. And so two good ones, right? So that goes on top of, as a player, he played with coaches like Larry Brown, George Karl, Terry Stotts during his 8-year NBA career. So, and I know when you're watching a game, sometimes you'll hear Mark Jones or other ones going, oh, that's the hammer play. The hammer play is actually George Karl designed for Darvin Ham. It was actually created off of him because he was always the big man that did the spin move and threw it to the three across the court in the corner. And so that hammer play is from Darvin Ham. So that's a new interesting fact if anyone did not know that before.
I did not.
He's been considered one of the top assistants in the NBA for years. So this was said all the way back in 2017. Ham is the kind of guy, not unlike his boss, Mike at the time, who could probably be happy for years as a top assistant. But one suspects that like Budenholzer, he'd be cheating himself if he didn't throw his hat in the ring at some point for a head coaching opportunity. So I don't know if people realize how stacked that Atlanta coaching staff was. I think he's one of two that has not been given a head coach opportunity, but it had Quinn, it had Kenny Atkinson,
and Snyder, yeah,
Ham, and they were all under Mike. And so it's crazy. And so there was some sort of stat I think I saw last year where it was like over 25% of the playoffs were consisted of guys from that Atlanta coaching staff. Like, it's just, they've all gone on to be successful.
Was that the 2013 team that made the finals?
13-14.
Yeah.
He actually won a ring as a player in Detroit in 2004 under Joe Dumars. So that's another connection.
Ooh, there you go.
So he coached under Mike, right, who has the kind of Monty connection. And then he played under Joe. He's known for understanding how to get a message through to a player without damaging an ego. That's a huge skill set for a coach in today's NBA. Ham has a reputation for being hard-nosed, but a great work ethic. Something that happened recently was, I know we all saw DeMarcus Cousins was signed to the Milwaukee Bucks. Who did they fly out to Las Vegas to work out DeMarcus to see if he would be a good fit for the team already? Ham. And what did DeMarcus Cousins say? He put him through the ringer. He did not make it easy on him. Like, and this is the thing when it comes to being, he's able to work you out without damaging an ego or bruising an ego or making someone like, oh man, why is he coming at me this hard? You know, like it works how his approach, how it comes across, works. So he was first hired in a player development role with the Lakers and has carried that title along with his assistant coach last 11 seasons. So he's always kind of been that like player development slash like associate head coach. Over the past 8 years, Ham has oversaw the development of players like Dennis Schroeder, Tim Hardaway, Taurean Prince, Chris Middleton, Giannis, Lopez, Dante DiVincenzo, the emergence of Pat Connaughton in working with, the Bucks staff. In Atlanta, you also saw guys like Kyle Korver and things like that. Something that Ham also says is most times offense is fleeting. So he told this to Gail Klappa of the Bucks flagship podcast. So most times offense is fleeting. No one knows who's going to come to the gym and have shots go into the basket for them. Defense is something you can get right almost every night. Nothing is 100% perfect, but there's a lot of excellence involved in defense, and you can really give yourself a chance to win if you're focused on that end of the court. Good defense leads to good offense. The opportunities you can create for yourself offensively mostly comes from the defensive end, whether you're causing the other team to turn the ball over, take a shot they're not looking for, force a player to keep the ball for the majority of the shot clock. It's just one of the things that you can really get right when you work at it. You know me, I push for the defense. To me, yep, this team doesn't have their, I'm never usually worried about their offense. Like, but this is always my thing. This team, when they're not shooting 100%, completely folds. They don't have anything to fall back on. This is a guy who preaches of learning how to win by at least having something to fall back on. Right. And I mean, he's coached for teams like that Atlanta team. People weren't expecting them to be, what they were, which is why people were so impressed with the Kenny Atkinson, with the Darvin Ham, with those player developments. Like, look, you're getting the most out of these guys. And they've continued to do that with the Bucks too, right? It helps, yes, when you have a star around you, but they've made everybody else around that star excel in their role. And that's something that the Kings haven't always done very well. So right. To me,
that's and then the
last,
too.
Yeah. And just last year, he was a finalist for the Pacers job, and he was a finalist for the Washington Wizards job. And we know the Wizards ended up going with Unseld, but again, you saw like kind of two defensive guys in the final
coaching
the final
backgrounds.
Race. And so, yes. And like they said, even back, I mentioned that 2017 quote, he could be a guy that could be happy as a top assistant for years, kind of like a, why am I drawing a blank, but Elston Turner, right? Like, who everyone always said that man should be a coach somewhere, but he has spent his career as
an
associate coach, but he has thrown his hat in the ring. He just never got the job. And so Ham is kind of being that similar so far in the 11 seasons where he's thrown the ring in and made it to the finals and has just never been given that real opportunity. But to me, it speaks volumes that, again, he's been successful wherever he's gone, and he made it by working himself up the ranks, right? Like, he started as a G League coach and worked his way up as player development and through that way. And the best of the best respect him and say he works with me without bruising an ego. And that's another thing that the Kings have had issues with, where we're not even stars with bruised egos. We're, you know what I mean? Like, that our players get bruised egos, which we feel like, why? Like, we, right. I know you're an NBA player, but you're not a Giannis, or, you know, you're not an all-star yet. You're not anything that would be a, something that we necessarily warrant that. So Darvin Ham, really cool, really respected guy. And I appreciate his, to me, where he would fit the Kings would be bringing more of the defensive mindset and player development. Mm-hmm.
How well that fits with McNair and his philosophies, I'm not sure. That's what I lean back on, is what McNair would be looking for in a coach. Darvin Ham is an outstanding head coaching candidate.
Yeah. And that's where we have no idea with McNair, right?
Like, yeah, that's fair. He's never run his own search.
No idea. Because look, I mean, if we heard Chris Finch was his guy, I mean, that's he true. Was a big man coach. He's not like some and run and done
yeah.
defense. So,
and it's worked in Minnesota.
And this is my thing, is like, he's worked under and been coached under every kind of coach. And like, as he said, he just tries to grab it and apply it to how he, I mean, Mike D'Antoni, Larry Brown, George Karl, Terry Stotts. I don't think that's like, they all coach one way. That's a pretty wide spectrum of
sure.
of guys. So yeah, but that's the biggest thing is we don't know what McNair wants. Like, we don't. So yeah.
So Darvin Ham, associate head coach currently in Milwaukee under Budenholzer. He played for the Bucks, yep. Did he not, as well?
Back he in did. His day. And that's yeah. that was under George Karl, and when the Hammer play was
gotcha.
Was created. You were correct.
And then second coach,
and I think
also
it was Ray
player.
Allen at the time. He was throwing him to the corner to Ray Allen. So
yeah, and that'll
if
work,
I'm not
usually.
Mistaken. Yeah. So Adrian Griffin is my next one. He's another associate head coach. He's with the Toronto Raptors. But another, again, player development, defensive. Oriented. But and when I even say defense oriented, it's not like these guys don't care about offense.
Yeah.
They just believe that it can't be all about offense. Like, the
crazy.
Good teams have something to fall back on.
Right.
Crazy, right? So, okay. All right. So some cool facts about Adrian, just to start off with. He actually has a son in the G League, currently played at Illinois and Syracuse. He has a daughter at UConn playing basketball. So and then a son at Duke, a daughter at UConn, right? Top program. And a son at Duke, who just won freshman conference player of the month. And if he declares for the draft, he's been in the top 10, draft discussion. So
what's his name? Something Griffin.
Yeah. Let me look. Is it Jay? Oh, I'm thinking Jay.
That's not huge to his coaching resume, but now I'm curious.
AJ Griffin. I knew there was a J.
Okay.
Okay.
Adrian Jr. Got it.
Probably, yeah. even though he's not the oldest, so yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it stands for something else. I don't know. But yeah, so he played college. So interesting enough, when Arturis took over the Chicago Bulls job, right? What was it, last year? Something interesting was most people thought Darvin Ham was going to get the job because, Adrian Griffin was going to get the job because he played college basketball at Seton Hall with Arturis. And so I thought that was an interesting thing. He ended up being, I think, one of the finalists, but they ended up going with
Billy Donovan.
Am I blank? Yeah, Billy Donovan, who you will come wrap around that Griffin coached under Billy Donovan in OKC. So at least the two of them came from the same stock in the sense that they were both running it. But so he played with him. And then he also played under Rick Pitino. And he says, not only was he the best guys I've coached, but also one of the smartest, only a matter of time before he becomes a head coach. He actually went undrafted and didn't enter the league until he was 25. But get this, he was 25, but ended up playing 11 seasons. That's pretty impressive. So he played 11 seasons, under Pitino, Don Nelson, Jeff Van Gundy, Avery Johnson, Scott Skiles, and PJ Carlissimo. So another good thing. So
those are some 90s, 2000 coaches right there.
So he's been an assistant in the league since 2008. So again, Ham 2011, here was 2008, two with Milwaukee, two with Chicago, one with Orlando, two with OKC, and four with Toronto. He's been the lead assistant or the associate assistant in Orlando, OKC, and Toronto. So he's another guy experience, right? He's had three different, the guy just under the head coach jobs, but has never, got that one higher. So to me, this was interesting. His last season as a player with Milwaukee, Coach Skiles called him, cut him, and in that same phone call said, come be a coach with me. And he was hired to the coaching staff.
Nice.
Like that. So in that phone call, his playing career ended, but his coaching career started. So to me, that told me a lot about what Skiles and people think about him in terms of a basketball mind, that it was, hey, sorry, I'm going to let you go, but I actually want to keep your basketball mind around because I think you can do this. So during the bubble, Nick Nurse actually let him coach a game, like for a full game. He said, I'm not going to coach. So he actually has one win as an NBA head coach. The Raptors came back from 16 down to beat the Sixers in the bubble. So he got his first win. And after that game, Nurse said, it'll probably come back to bite me in the ass because people are going to see that, like, what a good job he did and hire him. But he said, I felt like giving him, that opportunity. So that was pretty cool. So in his two seasons with the Bucks, they improved 20 games, not saying it was just him, obviously, but he was part of the staff that accomplished it. When that same coaching staff left, the team dropped back 10 games the next season. So in those two seasons, they went up 20. And then after they all left, they dropped 10. His next stop was with Chicago, and that was from 2011 to 2015. He was an assistant and player development under Coach Thibs. And so he actually calls him a father figure and says that a lot of his basketball philosophies come from him. And so he says he's not as much of a hard head, but the X's and O's at least will come from him, and, a very well respected coach. So he was there along with, guys like Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. And while he was there, Rose was the young one winning MVP. Something interesting was, Jimmy Butler, got the most improved player in 2014, 2015. And in his speech, he said, all my coaches had a lot to do with my MIP award, but I think Adrian Griffin, had the most impact because he had to deal with me just being unbearable. I think he has a lot to do with who I am. And so Jimmy Butler said, as him being that young guy, Griffin had to deal with him being the why aren't I getting more type thing? And Griffin had, he said that Griffin had to kind of in the same way that they mentioned Ham, like, how can I work with you without hurting the ego? Your right. time will come. Your time will come. Keep working with me and doing this and we will get there. And I mean, Jimmy Butler, who, you know, great player, says that
great
Adrian Griffin too. Is, yes, is why he is, you know, or that he credits him for the trajectory that he took. So awesome, right? So he spent one season after he left the Bulls. He spent one season with Orlando back under Scott Skiles again. They finished with 35 wins, and that was the young Oladipo, Aaron Gordon, when they first came into the league. He was only there for 1 year, but because he got the job as the lead assistant in OKC with Billy Donovan, and he was there from 16 to 18, where he worked with Russell Westbrook. Interesting enough, Rose won the MVP while he was there. Westbrook won the MVP while he was there. And they obviously had a good relationship because the Wizards, he was another interview of the Wizards last year, and they were using specifically if they wanted to keep Russ. So that was the route they were going if they had decided to keep Russ. So I think that's a pretty big kudos to Griffin in that sense of he would be able to handle that. The wins went up. Obviously, we know while him and Billy Donovan were there, they had good players, obviously, as well. He worked with Jeremy Grant. And Grant actually credits the trainer, Mike Davis, and Adrian Griffin with helping him become the better player he was during that season. He says his confidence comes from my work. The more work I put in, the more confidence I put out onto the court. He also credits him for helping him better finish at the rim. So again, we're seeing a list of players who got better, who were crediting him with getting there. Next is Toronto, where in his first season, they won the championship. We've seen growth in guys like, and this is consistently, not just his first year there, right? Like he's been there for at least 3-4 years now. So Fred VanVleet, Siakam, Norman Powell, Gary Trent Jr. Once he was traded there, they helped lead Toronto to a top five defense in 2018, 2019. And even when Kawhi left, they still finished in a top five defense again the next year. So again, they got the good role players to buy in and do what needed to be done. Nurse says that he adjusts his duties to different staff. That way everyone has a piece of experience and knows all aspects of scouting the game, game plans. And he thinks Griffin is ready for that next step. So Griffin says one of the biggest things he learned from Tibbs was regarding preparation. And he said he's used this when he's been tasked with the Toronto stuff. So he said Tibbs was a master of attention to detail. He knew how to put a game plan together that neutralizes our opponent's strengths and tries to exploit their weakness. I learned a lot from him, just his approach to managing a team and all the details that go into it. They would have 20-minute walkthroughs of opposing team plays. And he said players realized after they ended up leaving the team, that wasn't always done elsewhere and that they kind of missed how much prep work was put in that at the time, maybe it was like, oh man, we got to do this for the 17th time now, you know, out of 20. But then once they left, it was like, oh damn, they're not even doing it 10 times here. Like that they missed that kind of, they hated the preparation at the time, but you miss it after the fact. So
right.
The fact that players were even vocalizing that I think speaks volumes. He's worked with elite guards and he's also got bigs to buy in defensively. So again, you're seeing that he's hit both, you know, wings and bigs as well as, getting, guards to buy in. So all things that we could use here. Something I thought was interesting that he said was what's happening, especially I think in the younger generation, is that they have this perception that everything is supposed to go well. But really in life, there's a lot of ebbs and flows, a lot of highs and lows, a lot of peaks and valleys, and you got to learn how to navigate through those things. If I would have given up years ago, I wouldn't be standing here where he was today. This was a guy, right, like we said, who wasn't in the league until 25 and lasted 11 years. And I think what he hit is spot on. And we hear this in quotes with a lot of these young guys. They've never had to deal with this before. And their biggest, you know, downfall is how do I handle the thing's not going well because I've been the star wherever I've gone. I've never lost these kind of games before. Like, you know what I mean? Like, these are the best of the best. And so they were always winning.
Right.
And he made a great point of that. It's normal to have the ebbs and flows, but we got to get you in that mindset and to learn how to stay mentally strong as you overcome that. So, just as a recommendation, if you want to know more about him, there's a really cool podcast on YouTube. It's by Basketball Immersion. It's called Basketball Coaching Conversations, and it's episode 118, and it's called Adrian Griffin Developing a Coaching Philosophy. It's like an hour long of just him talking about his history and what he's learned under different coaches and all that kind of stuff. So, again, two guys that have been around for a long time that have just never been given that opportunity. And it's not because they haven't deserved it, right? It's, as we say, there's only 30 jobs here. So to me, in this sense, they're newbies, but they're not newbies because they've been around it all. They've won championships. Like, they've played with stars, with non-stars, like they've seen it all.
Yeah.
Right. And they've been associates in multiple places. Like, it's, and every coach says that they're ready. Where, and you don't always get every coach saying that every coaching person on their staff is ready, right? Like, that's not just something that's always thrown around. So, in that sense, it's, yes, they are green, but they're not. So, yeah, just two names, for player development. And if you want to look a little bit more defensively, but like I said, yes, they have that defensive mindset, but they very much, as every player, you know, kudo that I gave, they all mentioned both offense and defense and what they did to them and helping their mentality on the court and be mentally strong as well as being physically strong. So
four coaches, all of whom so far on this list, Kenny Atkinson played in the NBA for a little bit. Did he not? Or am I wrong? I thought he was a point guard somewhere.
Yeah, he was point guard.
Yeah. So all four coaches so far are former players. That is the pattern we see in the modern NBA, usually a former player, someone that can connect with this generation of guys. Darvin Ham, that was a trait you had mentioned, that he can get through to a player without hurting their ego. Egos are also very common. That's always been a case, though, in the NBA, I'd argue. A lot of guys with egos. Four good names, Jill. I know you have many more on this list. We're going to get to hopefully all of them before the season ends, before the Kings officially go and look for a new coach or stay with Gentry. Either way, there's going to be a search.
Yeah.
We will get through all of them. And I'm excited for all.
Yeah. And like I always say, it's similar to what I did with the front office, podcast one that I don't necessarily have one that I'm like rooting for. I just want people to realize, like, again, what's out there and what you could have, right? Mm-hmm. These are the guys on other benches, right? When we're talking about things. So, and like when you had an Atlanta Hawks bench that's full of now future head coaches, like the same can't be said for the benches that have been created here. Like, we've had some good benches, but I'm trying to think of one that we've had where it's like a whole bench went and became
head
coaches. Like, that's just not.
Elson Turner was probably the best assistant coach that we've had on the bench.
So
with Adelman and then with Jaeger, I can't think of anyone crazy.
They've all just been really good assistants.
Yeah.
And so just know that there are, there's a lot of talent out there that's ready, for the pickings, if so needed.
All of whom are more qualified and probably more intelligent than Luke Walton. So can only go up from here. All right, that'll do it on this Thursday edition of the Sports Ethos Sacramento Kings podcast. The Kings start a three-game road trip facing the Eastern Conference. They play Charlotte tomorrow evening in Charlotte. They go to Cleveland, play the upstart Cavaliers, and then they end the road trip with hopefully a chance of redemption against the Toronto Raptors, who smacked them around last time they played in Toronto, going to Canada for that one. And then they'll be back. And I wrote this down. I wanted to reiterate this, Jill, because it still blows me away. When they come back from this road trip on December 15th to play Washington, they will not play a game outside of California until January 7th. They have one road game in that entire time frame, starting from December 15th to January 7th to next year. One road game is San Francisco. They go to play Golden State. And then they also play, I think, actually, right after January 7th or right before January 7th, they play the Lakers in LA. But they won't leave the state of California.
Yeah.
They will not get on a plane for a long time.
Prime opportunity. As we always say, it's prime opportunity. What will you do with it? That is the question.
Probably throw it away. But, you know.
We're hoping that. Come on.
We're hoping.
Fingers crossed.
Some trades to shake up the roster a little bit. And then you get to live large like kings at your home arena. Go take advantage. All right. We'll see you guys back here tomorrow for a guest or two, probably on the Friday edition of the show. You guys have a great day. Slater, dudes.